laboratories will follow the procedure that is outlined in their instruction manual or the manual of procedures. And whatever that procedure is that, that applies to this testing, they will have to follow.
Senator Taylor, send that boy to law school.
I just had a question. It just seems strange to me. Does this mean that every time you give somebody a sample to be tested, you'd have to give them enough of a sample so that to get just, I don't, it just, I got it.
The question before the Senate is the adoption of the amendment to the letter of intent. Is there objection to the amendment to the letter of intent? Without objection, the amendment to the letter of intent is adopted. The question now before the Senate is the adoption of the letter of intent. Is there objection to the letter of intent? Without objection, the letter of intent is adopted. The bill is before us in third reading. There is an amendment. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we return to second reading for the purposes of adopting specific amendment number one that members have on their desks.
If there's no objection, we're in second reading for specific amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. President. When this bill was, I first took note of this bill, I was concerned about the confidentiality and the possibility of false positive drug tests following an innocent employee around in their employment record. And I worked with the senator from Bootleggers Cove, who's carrying the bill, and also with the representative of the sponsor, and with Ms. Juanita Hensley from DOT, and had my concerns about that resolved. The federal guidelines that were coming under for school bus drivers who are required to have commercial driver's licenses and transport in vehicles with 15 seats or more do have in the federal regulations and guidelines confidentiality and I'm completely satisfied by that and would encourage other members that it's a reasonable thing, a protection already in place. But for those persons transporting kids in I guess minivans or vehicles with seats 14 and fewer seats, and that's not kids in the seats but the seats of the vehicle, they're not required to have a commercial driver's license. The federal regulations that we're coming into with this legislation do not give any kind of confidentiality or protection from false positive test records following people from their work for a school district or for a private contractor to a school district for school bus driving services, for that false positive to follow someone in their employment record onto other employment. I know lots of people have anecdotes about things like this getting caught up in the bureaucracy and things like this, ruining people's lives and acing them out of jobs and doing things that we wouldn't want to see happen. So this amendment deals with those folks that would not receive protection under this bill without this amendment, especially, I guess, people in smaller communities or on bus routes where the buses are of the minivan type. So this amendment would bring equity to the protections for the employees, and I think it's a reasonable amendment to adopt.
Is there objection to amendment number one? Without objection, amendment number one is adopted. Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have a couple of questions on the legislation that perhaps the individual who's carrying the bill could respond to. Looking at the, I just want to be sure I clearly understand this. Looking at page two lines, well, that whole section there. It says, a school district or regional education attendance area that provides for the transportation of pupils shall require that the drivers of motor vehicles used to transport pupils submit to testing for the use of drugs and alcohol. I assume that means they have to submit before they're hired or upon immediately upon hired or being hired or whatever so they know whether or not they have or are using drugs or alcohol. But then it says the testing program must include random testing. Does that then imply or infer that they may be tested a couple more times during the year? And, you know, so they might not just have one test, but randomly they might end up with two or three tests during the year. And if that's the case, who's paying for this? Because I understand that these tests may be $80 a piece or so. And I don't know what a school bus driver makes, but maybe $10 an hour, $8 an hour. And, you know, that could be a couple days' work that they are paying, you know, they're paying, if they have to pay that three or four times during the year, one test might be like 2 days' work for them. So it's not clear to me, one, that this means one test a year, or it could mean, based upon whatever the school district wants to do, three or four or five tests for a certain bus driver. And that could be very costly for that individual, because it's not clear who pays for this. Does the school district pay for it? Does the bus driver pay for it? So I guess I'd like a response to those two concerns. And maybe we need to clarify it, that this is supposed to be just one test a year or a maximum of a certain number.
Well, I think Senator from Junior's got a good point. I think it seems to me that ultimately the cost of this program will get borne by the state. And it should have this amount. Seems to me.
Senator Adams?
Yes. By reading the fiscal note on this, is that upon entry of your employment, that you would be taking your first test. Then we estimate that there's 840 drivers in the state, and half of that, 50% of those, will be tested on an annual basis at random, so that's 420. Then we estimate their cost of $80 for each testing. That cost will then be borne by the, we will put in our fiscal note of $84,000 is paid by the Department of Education. That's the way I read this. That's the way I read this bill.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I'd like to complicate that a little bit further. Page 2, line 3, where it does say, shall require that the drivers be tested. I've got communities in Bush, Alaska, that have buses that we cannot test those bus drivers because the health aides do not have the capability of sending the test for some reason. I don't know exactly what it is, but they cannot do any testing out in the Bush communities by health aides. And this requires that they be tested, but who's going to do the testing? Is it the school that's going to be doing the testing? Because it will not be the health care provider.
Senator Salem.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've had a problem with this legislation from the beginning, and I think that there's two main questions that come to mind relative to it. First of all, what problem is it addressing? I don't know that there was any testimony in the committee process that indicated that there's a large problem out there relative to drug and alcohol abuse amongst school bus drivers. I've known over my 20-year career in education hundreds of school bus drivers, and I've happened to not know any that had a drug or alcohol abuse problem. Maybe I just knew the good ones, I don't know. And then I guess the second question that's equally as important is, even if we did have a problem out there with drug and alcohol abuse among school bus drivers, does this bill solve that problem? And I would purport that it doesn't solve that problem. Probably the thing we should worry about most in Alaska would be alcohol abuse, and certainly driving while drunk. I mean, but in order to prevent that, we'd have to do a breathalyzer before each bus run if you were going to, you know, significantly and absolutely deal with the problem. I think maybe the most important thing to look at here, if you're to look at the fact that we do have a lot of children being transported, it's absolutely in our best interest that they are safely transported. I would say that a criminal records check would maybe be the most important thing that we could do. That is not in Title 14 as a requirement. I guess we could add that statutorily, but I think there's one that's probably done in issuing a commercial driver's license, which bus drivers have to have. I'm guessing that that's where that is. Am I right? Oh, good. And so if you do a criminal records check on an individual, you're likely to catch if they've had any DWIs in the past. And in addition to that, you would probably catch if there's been any convictions for sexual abuse, which is also a concern when you're looking at the safety of children on school buses. I know this is a motherhood and apple pie issue, but I'm going to vote no, because I think that to all the school bus drivers that I know who are fine, hardworking people, drug testing is an insult, and it's an expense we don't need.
Senator Frank?
My co-chair has provided me a copy of the fiscal note. I don't know, do people have it in their packets?
Wait.
I don't know if it's the right one.
Thank you.
What did that one say? I'd be interested.
Will the Senate please stand at ease? Senate, please come back to order. We are in debate on committee substitute House Bill 2, Rules Amended Senate.
Mr. President.
Senator Taylor.
Just before the break, a question was asked about alcohol, and that alcohol was probably more common.
Back to order. Senator Taylor.
The concern about alcohol reminded me of a former colleague, representative from Spinard, Representative Grunberg, who spent a considerable period of time educating all of us on a thing called the ignition interlock device. And I was just thinking that we can take this up under reconsideration at a later time, but it might be a good opportunity to amend this legislation so as to incorporate an ignition interlock device on all buses. And that way the driver would have to blow into that device before the bus would start up. And we could be assured that every time somebody drove the bus that they weren't under the influence of alcohol. Just a thought. Right now.
They could even be installed at the voting stations. Senator Lehman.
Mr. President, there's some of the other questions asked just before the break were, is this really necessary? Mrs. Hensley from the DMV was relating a story earlier today about one of the bus contractors who initiated this testing, and she said that they found that 8 of the drivers tested last year tested positive for cocaine. And you know, so unfortunately, it is necessary, and testing is finding people who are testing positive. The question asked by the senator from Juneau, is this random testing? The answer is yes. And the senator from the Northwest Alaska did go through the fiscal notes, so I won't do that. The senator behind me asked who will do the testing in rural Alaska. Department of Education will adopt regulations to implement that, and they are aware of some of these special needs in rural Alaska. The department representative that answered said that they will adopt regulations appropriate to rural Alaska, recognizing the constraints about people, and so that should answer the questions.
Question before the Senate is final passage of Committee Substitute House Bill 2, Rules Amended Senate. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Committee Substitute House Bill 2, Rules Amended Senate, has passed the Senate by a vote of 19 yeas to 1 nay. Madam Secretary. Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, I'd like to bring up reconsideration at this time of Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 372, Finance Amended, and I have a proposed amendment.
Without objection, Senator Adams.
May we go ahead and eat this a minute?
Senator will stand. Objection to taking up Senate Bill 372 on the same day. Without objection, the reconsideration of Senate Bill 372 is before us. Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, I have a proposed specific amendment number 4, which will close the loophole on 76 percent alcohol by volume from July 1 of 1994 to June 30, 1995, the new effective date. So with that explanation, I would move amendment. I would move that we return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment.
Is there objection to return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment? Without objection, committee substitute Senate Bill 372 amended is in second reading for specific amendment number 4.
Mr. President, I would move amendment number 4.
Amendment number 4 has been moved. Is there objection to the adoption of amendment number 4? Without objection, amendment number 4 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading on final passage on reconsideration.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President.
Senator Sharp.
I'm going to vote for the bill, but I still have extreme concern about redefining a village without having a perimeter in there. It appears to me that a village could reach out many, many miles and able to get the 25 people they need to have a an election. And I think the testimony in Senate Finance by the people that's enforcing this or trying to enforce it and come up with reasonable regulations stated very clearly why that 10-mile perimeter was needed, but I won't beat a dead horse.
The question before the Senate is final passage of committee substitute Senate Bill 372 amended. On reconsideration, members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? So committee substitute Senate Bill 372 amended is passed the Senate by a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays. Senator Taylor.
I would ask unanimous consent that the vote on passage of the bill be reconsideration be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call and final passage of committee substitute Senate Bill 372 amended on reconsideration will be considered the roll call on the effective date clause. Madam Secretary, the next bill on the calendar.
CS for House Bill 443, Research has amended effective date failed by the House Resources Committee and Act relating to the confidentiality of certain records relating to fish and wildlife.
Bill is before us in third reading on final passage. If there is no debate, the question for the Senate is final passage committee substitute House Bill 443. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute House Bill 443, Resources amended, has passed the Senate by a vote of 17 yeas, 3 nays. Senator Taylor?
It was in the House, wasn't it?
The effective date failure in the House. Did we amend the bill?
We did.
If the bill were amended in the Senate, it would be worth putting an effective date on because they would have another chance. But it was not amended in the Senate, okay. So it doesn't matter. It will take effect 90 days after being signed by the governor. Senator Pierce.
I would move that we hold it has to be read before I can do that. No? I move we hold reconsideration of CS Senate Bill 363 Finance amended to tomorrow's calendar by way of catching up. The supplemental and reapproach bills are finally on the House calendar tomorrow. However, I'm told that it may well be that they don't go from second to third and get final passage. We are in a position where may be a good thing we've got 363 because it may have to become the vehicle.
Without objection, committee substitute 363 will be held under reconsideration for tomorrow's calendar. Senator Pierce?
I would move that we hold reconsideration of Senate CSCS House Bill 454 rules to tomorrow's calendar. Actually, it might be the better vehicle to use if we have to.
Without objection, Senate Committee Substitute Committee Substitute House Bill 454 rules will also be held for tomorrow's calendar. Senator Frank.
And for that reason, I would like to extend gracious thanks to the minority for helping us hold that for so long.
Good idea.
Madam Secretary, that brings us to CSHJR 55. Senator Lincoln.
I'd like to bring up my notice of reconsideration on CS for HB 531, an act relating to the Milk Control Advisory Board, blah, 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 blah.
What was the last part of that title?
I don't think you want me to read all of that.
Senator Taylor.
Committee Substitute House Bill 531, State Affairs, be held at the bottom of the calendar, reconsideration.
Without objection, the reconsideration of Committee Substitute House Bill 531, State Affairs, will be held at the bottom of the calendar.
Mr. President.
Senator Lincoln.
I'd like to also be noted for reconsideration for CSHB 2.
Reconsideration on House Bill 2 is noted.
CS for House Joint Resolution number 50, CS for House Joint Resolution number 55, resources by the House Resources, relating to the importance of to the economy of Southeast Alaska, continued timber harvest on the Tongass National Forest. Resources recommends the Senate CS do pass. Report was signed by Senator Miller, concurring Senator Freeman and Jarrah. Senators Adams and Pierce, no recommendation. Rules recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Halford Chair, concurring Senators Rigger, and Jacko. There's a resources Senate CS.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move an action out of consent that the resources version for House Joint Resolution number 55 be adopted and move the original bill.
Without objection, the Resources Committee substitute is adopted and move the original bill.
Senate CS for House Joint Resolution number 55, resources, and there is an amendment number 1 by Senator Duncan.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent to adoption of amendment number 1.
There is objection, Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could discuss amendment number 1 a little bit, I think folks will see what the what is attempting to do. It's kind of a long amendment, and I'm going to break it into some parts here, talking about the first page 3, line 15, page 3, line 16, page 3, line 18, the purpose of that part of the amendment, then move on to the other parts of the amendment also. Mr. President, right now, an evaluation of the economic impacts of wilderness on the Tongass timber industry and the fishing industry and tourism is already done under ANILCA. It's under section 706B of ANILCA. That report also evaluated logging levels, fish and wildlife protection, and the small business timber sale program. Reports done by the Forest Service, by the U.S. Forest Service, in consultation with the timber industry, with native corporations, and with conservationists. And what's happening in this resolution, it seems to me, is that the timber industry is asking for a special evaluation that excludes all these other industries. And I'm really questioning whether that's the way we should do it, because that, in that way, the timber industry seeks to get preferential treatment. The evaluation, as I said, called for in this resolution should be the same as that required under ANILCA, so that there is a balanced approach, and so that the fishing industry and tourism is also considered, and that's what this portion of the amendment would do. And as I said, that's what's presently being done under ANILCA. Second part of the amendment calls for, if you look at it, we have deleted the word increase and insert the word stabilized, talk about inserting a term to assure long-term stable timber industry, which I think is important. The amendment calls for stable and continued timber availability. The Tongass is a multiple-use forest. and should no more be managed to provide maximum opportunity for timber any more than it should provide maximum opportunity for commercial fisheries or for mining or for tourism or for any other forest use. Commercial and sport fisheries, subsistence hunting and fishing, tourism and recreation are all part of Southeast Alaska's lifestyle and mainstays of its diversified economy. Other industries can be or will be or may be or are hurt by elevating one use over another. Resolutions from this legislature need to take all forest users into consideration, I believe, and follow a more balanced approach. And that's why I offer this amendment. I might add, I don't know how many other members of this body got copies of these resolutions, but communities and native groups throughout Southeast Alaska have expressed concern that current and past forest practices have had a detrimental impact on subsistence and other uses. And they have called for a timber harvest plan that protects the multiple use mandate, and that's what this amendment is trying to do. And I have copies of those resolutions here, one from the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood, from the Grand Camp Convention that was held in Angoon in 1993. They adopted a resolution asking for that approach. The city of Tenakee Springs has adopted a resolution, and they specifically opposed HJR 55. City of Angoon has adopted a resolution. The Huna Totem Corporation, of course, which represents many people in Southeast Alaska, has adopted a resolution concerned about subsistence uses and what might happen without a balanced approach of harvesting our timber, and also the Village of Cake has done likewise. So there's much support in Southeast Alaska, I think, for a stable timber industry. I think there's support for a stable timber industry, but this resolution goes beyond that and I think goes away from the balanced approach or balanced use of the Tongass forest that we should be seeking. I would urge you to adopt the adoption of the amendment.
Senator Taylor?
Well, it certainly warrants a response, I guess. We've been looking for a balanced approach on the Tongass for at least the last 20 years. We haven't seen one, and so I'd certainly encourage my colleague to assist us in finding one. But I guess a balanced approach in studying the Tongass, instead of just studying the economic impact that timber has had or will have, would be kind of like studying Juneau on just the economic impact of removing the legislature and not studying what the economic impact would be on tourism, mining, timbering, fishing, other activities in this community. Of course, I don't think anybody in this community would suggest that they would ever publish a study of that type without taking into consideration those other economic factors, which I'm sure they have. But I'm reminded when I see this amendment of the last letter to the editor that my dear friend, colleague who used to serve and sit in the back of this chamber, Bob Ziegler, God rest his soul, said. And that was, if stuff like this continues to come out of Juneau, maybe we in Ketchikan ought to reconsider our position on moving this capital.
Mr. President.
Senator Dunn.
Mr. President, the majority leader knows better than that, and that's not what this amendment talks about at all. And yes, we should be studying the impact on all industries if there's going to be any change in the pattern of that industry or in the use of that industry. And that's what this amendment provides for, is we have a balanced approach to Tongass, a multiple use approach. That's what's important. And that we not make one use preferential over the other use. That there not be one use preferential over the other use, but that it be a balanced approach and recognize that commercial fisheries and that tourism and that timber harvest all play an important role in the economy of Southeast Alaska, and all those have to be part of an overall plan. That's what's important. I'm sure not advocating here that there should not be logging in Southeast Alaska. If you look at the amendment, in fact, what it does say is we need to stabilize our timber industry in Southeast Alaska. We need to assure long-term stable timber industry. I think that's what we want. We don't want a timber industry that is there one day and disappears the next day. That's for sure. I don't want that, and I don't think the majority leader wants that. We want a stable timber industry, and that's what this is proposing. It surely is not, has no relationship to the last comment he made where there's a fight between communities. Not at all. In fact, most of the support for this amendment, the City Borough Juneau didn't adopt a resolution or take a position, but many smaller communities throughout Southeast Alaska and Native corporations and others have done so and have contacted my office and asked if I wouldn't discuss this and debate it on the floor. And I want to debate it on a rational level and not on the emotional bent that the majority leader wants to get it to. It's easy to make those types of emotional inflammatory statements, but let's debate it on the merits of having a stable timber industry and a balanced approach and the impact it's going to have on the other industries, on fishing and on tourism and so on. That's what the kind of debate we should have, Mr. Majority Leader, not an emotional response.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have some concerns with this amendment. Personally, I would like to see the one whereas on page 3, line 19 through 21. I personally would like to see an increase in the amount of timber available for harvest. I mean, we could stabilize it, but, we could stabilize it maybe 1 million board feet a year for the next 1,000 years. We've stabilized the timber industry in Southeast Alaska. I don't think we'd create any jobs there, but it certainly would be stabilized. So I would just speak against the amendment. I don't think we necessarily want to stabilize it. I would like to see it increase so we do have jobs out there, so those jobs that were lost in Sitka, we can get them back and continue to create jobs in the state for change.
Question for the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 1. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? So Amendment Number 1 has failed to be adopted by a vote of 10 yeas, 10 nays.
I have no further amendments.
Senator Taylor, would you move it?
I would ask unanimous consent, Senate Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, House Joint Resolution 55 resources be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed in final passage.
There is objection. Question before the Senate is advancement of Committee Substitute House Joint Resolution 55. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Committee Substitute, Senate Joint, or House Joint Resolution 55 resources has failed to advance by a vote of 10 yeas, 10 nays. Madam Secretary.
CS for House Joint Resolution Number 56 resources by the House Resources Committee relating to an exemption for federal land in Alaska from the federal packed fish management strategy. Resources recommends the Senate CS and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Miller, Chair, concurring Senators Lehman, Yaroff, and Frank. Senators Adams and Pierce signed no recommendation. Rules Committee considered the bill recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Helfer, Chair, concurring Senators Rieger, Yaroff, and Jocko. There is a resources. Senate CS.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the resources version for House Joint Resolution Number 56 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the resources committee substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Senate CS for CS for House Joint Resolution Number 56, and I have no amendment.
Senator Taylor.
Ask unanimous consent. Senate Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, House Joint Resolution 56 resources being considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed in final passage.
Question before the Senate is the advancement of House Joint Resolution 56. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary lock the roll and record the vote? So House Joint Resolution 56 fails to advance by a vote of 11 yeas, 9 nays. Madam Secretary.
House concurrent resolution number 36 amended, suspending uniform rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E of the Alaska State Legislature concerning Senate Bill 247 relating to state leases and to state lease purchase and lease financing agreement on the calendar from yesterday.
The resolution is on the calendar in final passage. It is required to adopt the the House version of the bill. Senator Duncan?
Mr. President, could someone again explain why, what we're doing here, what's the deal on this and how it relates to the bill? I mean, I understand we're amending the title, but what happened to the bill, why that's necessary and so on.
Senator Phillips, isn't that your... Senator Phillips?
Mr. President, the only knowledge I have on this resolution is that the title was changed in the House, and that's the main reason for this resolution.
Maybe I could be of some assistance.
Senator Taylor?
Thank you. The title was changed in the House on page 1, line 3. They inserted the words, with certain exceptions. And if you look on page 2, beginning at line 17, the words, however, notwithstanding the limitation imposed by Alaska 36, etc., the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, and then it lists... This is new language. It lists an entire section for the remainder of that page and then goes on to new language at the top of page 3 where it talks about not to exceed 2 years when the rent is payable from university receipts. The lease may contain one or more optional renewal periods, etc. This makes this provision about limiting the ability to enter into leasehold agreements applicable to the university. If you would then look on page 9, at line 9, an entire new section, section 12, was added, wherein this same, these same type of restrictions, and it's rather detailed there, also become applicable on the Alaska court system and the Department of Natural Resources so as to prevent them from entering into lease arrangements which would be contrary to these provisions. So it's my understanding that what the House did was they took the concerns expressed in this legislation about leaseholds and the ability of various departments and agencies of state government to enter into them and brought under that umbrella the Department of Natural Resources, the university, and the court system.
Mr. President, I'm not sure I read that way on section 12 of the bill now that I found the bill. It seems to me that what we may be doing is exempting the court system from some provisions here. I'm not sure what we are, but it says notwithstanding the amendments of all these statutes made by section 5 and section 7 and section 6 and section 2 of this act and section 11, after the effective date of this section, and until December 31st, 1994, the Alaska Supreme Court may continue to enter into lease purchase or lease financing agreements for the judicial branch under the provisions of other statutes. So it looks like to me we're specifically exempting the court system from some of the provisions of this legislation. And I guess I would wonder why, other than perhaps this has to do with leasing or lease purchase of the old Anchorage Times building for the new courthouse or something. I don't. Does anyone know for sure?
Senator Kutula?
I need a copy of this material. I've looked every place for it in my package. I've got the one for you.
Will the Senate please stand at ease?
Come on.
Please come back to order. Senator Duncan. Senator Phillips.
Mr. President, I was going to answer a lot of these questions had we gone to the concurrence of the Senate amendments to Senate Bill 247. So I,
Senator,
you know,
Phillips, the concurrence is out of order until the resolution is adopted. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
So Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I'm going to recommend against adopting the resolution until I understand what the amendments were. So I think it's appropriate under this to discuss what the
It is appropriate to ask the questions, but the...
Maybe she knows.
Will the Senate please come back to order? Because the resolution deals specifically with the title amendment necessary for the adoption of the bill is basically before us at the same time. You really can't debate the difference without knowing what's in the bill. So, Senator Phillips, if you want to go through the differences as to why the title amendment is necessary, please do.
Okay. Mr. President, for the record, the resolution before us is just to have the ability for the House to change the title to Senate Bill 247. I stated that for the record without getting into the details of the bill. If the members pull out of their concurrence message file, you'll have Senate Bill 247 in front of you. That's where you're going to find it. The only changes the House or the other body had made was to on page 1, line 3, and added the words, and with certain exceptions, if you want to yellow line that. The House also added language starting on page 2, line 17, through page 3, line 4. That's all new language dealing with the University of Alaska to enter lease agreements with renewal periods that exceed the original period of the lease, and I might add not more than 5 years when the lease is paid solely from federal grants. The House also added section 12, starting page line 9, through page 9, line 26. Section 12 authorizes the court system to continue its efforts to acquire the Anchorage Times building or property in Anchorage and gives the court system until December 31st of this year to complete that purchase. All other provisions of the bill have immediate effective dates. Those are essentially the changes made to this bill by the other body.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple questions, and perhaps someone who's more familiar with the university and perhaps finance co-chair, what's intended here, why this language was added in the House but wasn't in the Senate bill, that allows the university to enter into a lease that will be paid solely from a grant or contract made by the federal government. Is there a specific project that this relates to or just going to be taking place? Maybe it relates to the capital budget, $12.5 million that's in there. I don't know if it does or not. And then secondly, I guess just so I'll know for sure,
Well, I was just asked to answer the question. The answer is no.
Senator Phillips, unless you have a point of order, it's out of order to interrupt the speaker. Even with the answer. Is Senator Duncan or Senator Phillips, would either one of you enlighten us?
You don't lose the answer. And then I was wondering on page 9, section 12, this authorizes the court system to go ahead and continue the lease purchase of the Anchorage Times building. I guess I have several questions about that. You know, I didn't even know that was happening until one day last summer I was in Anchorage, and they said that's going to be the new administrative headquarters for the new court building because they didn't have enough room in the new court building for the administrative offices, and I asked how that was going to happen, and some kind of lease purchasing arrangement. Is that one of those ones that never has to have approval by the legislature? And where do they get the extra money to pay the increased cost of that lease purchase?
Well, on that first question that he asked that was answered by the other senator, this is just like that other $12 million. They didn't tell me anything about this either, so I don't know. But I don't know the answer to that question, but apparently it's no. On the court system, I do know something. I learned it almost the first day of the session when we had a hearing in LBNA, and we went through this whole machination on the Anchorage Court building. We were all, you know, kind of miffed because they didn't talk to too many of us about the Anchorage Times building, and so we had a hearing on it and kind of decided reluctantly that maybe it was not such a bad deal and probably couldn't have stopped it anyway, so we just said okay, to be honest. And so if there are provisions in here that allow them to move forward on the acquisition of the Anchorage Times building, it wouldn't be inconsistent with what the LBNA committee did in its meeting in early January.
Senator Pierce?
I believe that we passed a bill early in the session, and at least sent it to the House, that would, in the future, force the courts to come to us. This is it? Okay. But they... I mean, they had the authority, unfortunately, to do what they did with the Times building.
Senator Phillips?
Mr. President, we passed a bill last year. Well, the problem is the administration has been buying these buildings, and then we get stuck with the bill at the end. No say about it. We have the SpamCam building back here that went through the same process, because the judiciary and the University of Alaska were exempt from that bill that we passed last year. This bill includes the University of Alaska and the judiciary to put us, the legislature, on the front end of the deal instead of the back end of the deal. And that's why we have this bill. It came to our attention, meaning legislative budget and audit, in early August of last year, dealing with the SpamCam building. And it was a result of the... we became aware of how these buildings were being purchased as a result of an audit done in Wildwood Correctional Center done the year before. And it also came to our attention in fall of 93 that the judiciary... was thinking about buying the Anchorage Times building for their, whatever they're doing, courthouse building. And we had one hearing in December in Anchorage on this, and asked the court system to come before the Budget and Audit Committee on, I think it was January 15th, to present what they've come up for on this building. And the committee essentially gave the nod, even though we really did not have the authorization to do it because they were exempt from the law that we had passed last year. And that's essentially what this bill is doing, is to close up the loopholes for the judiciary and for the University of Alaska in purchasing buildings or property without prior legislative approval. And that's essentially what this bill does.
Senator Kurtula.
This really goes back to the fact that we've been leasing immense amounts of space, sometimes very costly figures. Completely inappropriate action has been taking place here with the legislature merely getting the bill. And, of course, the quick history is that during the Hammond administration, we used to authorize Alaska Housing to build a lease purchase arrangement for the state. The state would end up, after the bill was paid, with the ownership of these facilities. We used to authorize them with a concurrent resolution, and that particular administration said that wasn't enough. We should not do business that way, and no further could a resolution authorize construction of concurrent resolution authorize construction of facilities. We built a number of them using that. As a matter of fact, the courthouse of Valdez was one of them. Well, after we removed the ability of the legislature to bond to concurrent resolution for essentially the same thing as lease purchase to Alaska Housing, then they just went out without any endorsement of the legislature whatsoever, any authorization, and proceeded to lease. all over the state, particularly right here, and I think in Anchorage. And frankly, it's a, the whole thing should be brought to an end. I think it's coming to an end now. First administration recognized on its own, this administration, that maybe they should purchase some buildings. Ownership was better than leasing at these high rents, and took it upon themselves to do so within the law, presumably. Now we've gotten into it again, and we should be into it for in the fashion we now are. But again, it's time that we had a look at what buildings are needed and what the comparison between ownership and rental rates are, and proceed to construct or to buy certain buildings in the state. And we ought to be on with the job, because we've gotten some horrendous rental prices, and we should be owning rather than renting under the conditions that we have some of these particular facilities. $40,000 a month for a laboratory and so on. You know, it's ridiculous. It's our fault as much as anybody's.
Senator Duncan?
Well, Mr. President, I understand what this does, and I understand the problem with the lease purchasing that's been going on in the state. In fact, you know, I'm not convinced that the community of Buno came out ahead because the spam can is now no longer on the tax rolls, right? I mean, that may have not been the best deal in the world for the city and borough of Juneau to purchase that building, a $6 million building, and take it off the property tax rolls, because all the rest of us then pay for that. And that, of course, was done without legislative approval. And I understand, but let me assure that the senator from Eagle River, that has nothing to do with the Judiciary University. That was done by the Department of Administration. That wasn't for the judicial system or for the university. That was. So this bill would have stopped that practice. What we're just debating is the addition of the university and the judicial system. So it's separate, and that's what the House added. And I still, you know, I probably don't have any problem ending up supporting this. If I could just get some answers, I think we should know, since this was added, and I'm not on the Finance Committee this time, and haven't had time to review that, what is the lease purchase cost of the Anchorage Times building? How much is it going to cost on a yearly basis? And when we approve this, maybe it's going to happen even if we don't approve this, what's going to be the yearly lease cost that we have to build into the budget each year? Because that's going to be part of their operating budget that's going to continue to come before us, first. And secondly, I really do think we deserve, before we approve this resolution, to have more specific information on what that university language is there for. It's not good enough to say, well, I don't know, it got slipped in here somehow, and we're not sure what it's for. I think we need to know what it's for. And again, it may make a whole lot of sense, but I think it's not unreasonable to be able to explain what those amendments mean and how they impact before we move ahead. And there's options. We could defeat the resolution. We can hold it over and get the answers and do it tomorrow. We're not adjourning tomorrow. So we've got a couple, 3 days left to figure this thing out, and I'd like to have the information before we take a final vote.
Senator Frank?
I think those are reasonable questions, and we should have the answers. I could tell you that, as my recollection has it, interestingly, the court building, in Anchorage Times building, I think the prohibition was like $1 million annual lease payments, and interestingly, the debt service was just about 990-some thousand, so as I recall. But we could probably, I'm sure Art's probably got that, you know, file on that, and we could get that for tomorrow. And I'll try to find out about the university.
Senator Duncan, I would just point out that without the bill, we have no control at all over the Anchorage Times building.
No, I understand.
And with it, we probably don't either, I guess. Yeah.
And with it, we probably don't either. But, you know, Mr. President, I understand that. And I'm not suggesting that we, in fact, I'm not even sure I want to vote no on this thing. I just want to know what I'm voting for or against when I vote for it. And I think there's a question on the university. We don't have the answer. And we're going to be back here tomorrow, or I guess, or Monday anyway, right? And maybe just a motion to hold this and get the information would solve everybody's problems.
Senator Phillips, do you have any?
Well, the senator from Juneau wants to know about the sale agreement. You know, unfortunately, they didn't have the file until just now, but. Okay.
Could we move to hold HCR 36 for
President.
Tomorrow's calendar? Without objection, HCR 36 is held for tomorrow's calendar? Madam Secretary?
Senate CS for CS for House Joint Resolution 43 Judiciary, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to the rights of victims of crimes and to criminal administration before the Senate in reconsideration.
Senator Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. President. There is an amendment on the clerk's desk. I'd move that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Is there objection to returning to second reading for purposes of specific amendment? Without objection, we're in second reading for purposes of specific amendment.
Mr. President, I'd move amendment number one.
There is objection, Senator Rieger.
Okay. Mr. President, after the vote the other day, I took some time, and I know it was late in the session, to try to look at all of what's contained in HJR 43 and found two issues. One was the requirement in section one that the various principles for criminal administration would be ranked in order in the Constitution, and that was a locking in of a priority that reflects perhaps the tenor of today's times. It didn't reflect the tenor 20 or 30 years ago, I don't think, and might not again in the future. And the actual amendment, which is, would just delete the four words in the order provided, so that all of the considerations which are listed there would be considered, but they wouldn't be prioritized. The other issue I would point out is not part of the amendment, so it's probably not appropriate to speak to it at this time.
Senator Lehman.
Mr. President, in response to the amendments, this is something that we debated in the State Affairs Committee. Our intent is that we exhibit some priority of those five items that are listed. And however, you know, I'll acknowledge that there is no particular weighting to any of these, and you know, a court certainly is going to be looking at all of them. We tried to rank those in a priority that we thought would be appropriate. I'm going to oppose the amendment. I think it probably doesn't do a terrible disservice, although I think it does take away somewhat from the strength of what I think would be appropriate in this constitutional amendment.
Senator Rieger?
Mr. President, I disagree with the former statement. I think that the Constitution is a document which is supposed to be long-lasting, and there is nothing after the deletion of these four words which would prevent the legislature from putting a prioritization and waiting in law if they so chose, and later amending that if they found that that was inappropriate. I think that the suggestion that this type of ranking should be listed in the Constitution is just inappropriate. It doesn't detract from the consideration of the items listed, but it puts what needs to be in the Constitution, and what doesn't need to be put in the Constitution isn't there.
Senator Cotrilla.
I think the previous speaker made a very good and salient point, as was made previously by the same speaker the other evening. And people watching this bill at the time were extremely incensed that we should pay some small attention to the statement. Proper art form for a constitution is a necessity in order to preserve it for any length of time. The document can't be cluttered, and frankly, I thought the senator from Anchorage made a very good point of view, but I received a fairly harsh condemnation as a result of my paying some attention, saying I paid no attention at all. I resented that. I resent the people involved in, no matter how good their intent is, how good their point of view is, they might well understand that other people also may have just as much interest in what they're after, but want to do it in a correct way.
That was interesting. Senator Donnelly?
Mr. President, I'm also going to vote against this. I think by deleting the prioritization portion of that amendment or this section one, I think you imply that they should all be given equal priority. And I don't know if the legislature, it'd be very easy, I think, for a court to interpret that. And I don't think then the legislature would have the power by statute to prioritize. I do support the order that is here and that guidance be given to the criminal justice system in the consideration of criminal administration of that system. And I'm afraid that by adopting this amendment and it deleting in the order provided, we make all those co-equal and remove the ability of the legislature at a future time to adjust.
Senator Couture?
I rise to say that the legislature can write statute and give prioritization.
Senator Rieger?
Mr. President, thank you. I would invite the senator from Spinard to read Article 1 and see if there's any place else in the Constitution where we list things and say that they are in the priority that they're stated in the particular section. There are sections that say every person may freely speak, write, and publish on all subjects. For example, on Article Section 5, it doesn't say every person may, in the order provided, freely speak, write, and publish. I mean, no place else are we trying to set this out in this level of specificity. It might reflect the tenor of the times today to say that, by gosh, we want to put the principle of reformation at the bottom and we're going to put something else higher. That's not how it was several decades ago, but maybe that's where the society is today, and we can do that. But I don't see the appropriateness of locking that in perpetuity. Constitution should be as simple as possible, and I think that this type of ranking is trying to put a statutory policy into the Constitution, which might be where the mood of the public is today, might not be 50 years from now.
Senator Donnelly?
Well, what's different about this particular issue compared to almost all the other issues addressed in other parts of the Constitution is that there's very few things in the Article 1, which is essentially the Alaska Constitution's Bill of Rights, that didn't have some relationship to those rights that have come down from federal jurisdiction, the federal Constitution, and other constitutions the states have had. So when we're dealing with a brand new issue of first impression in constitutional law like victims' rights, I think it's very important to give additional, very specific guidelines to the court as to what is exactly meant. A good example of what happens when you don't do that is the right to privacy, which is in Article 2, Section 22. As we know, there's no specific right to privacy in the federal Constitution. People of the state decided to add a specific one to our state constitution, and the court, since it had no specific guidelines under federal law or other things to look to, made some rather unique interpretations of that right to privacy. And that's the kind of thing we're trying to avoid with an issue of first impression to in constitutional law, like victims' rights. And that's why it's appropriate to give a little more guidance, be a little more specific when you're dealing in that area.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 1. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Amendment Number 1 has failed to be adopted by a vote of 9 yeas to 11 nays. Senator Rieger?
If you have a brief at ease, please.
Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Will the Senate please come back to order? We're in the consideration of committee substitute, House Joint Resolution 43, Judiciary. Does the Secretary have further amendments? Or where are we? Oh, we're in third reading. We're in third reading on final passage. Question before the Senate is final passage on reconsideration, a Senate committee substitute for committee substitute House Joint Resolution 43, Judiciary. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Will the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so Senate committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 43, Judiciary, has passed the Senate on reconsideration by a vote of 17 yeas to 3 nays.
I'm gonna try.
Madam Secretary?
Conference Committee substitute. The Conference Committee with limited powers of free conference considering CSSB 248 rules AM and House CS for CS for Senate Bill 248 Finance recommends that Conference CS for Senate Bill 248 second and act related to services for and protection of vulnerable adults effective date be adopted. The report was signed by Senator Sharp, Chair, concurring Senators Lehman and Curtula, Representative Martin, Chair, Representatives Brown and Parnell. This is a new bill.
Wait, this is a second conference committee substitute? Now gone back and come up with another CS? Oh, good. Senator Taylor.
I move the Senate adopt the conference committee report on conference committee substitute.
Oh. Keep going.
Conference Committee substitute, Senate Bill 248, second. There we are.
I guess the question before the Senate is, shall the Senate adopt the Conference Committee substitute, Senate Bill 248, which is the second substitute of the first Conference Committee? Senator Dunn.
I think it's a reasonable request to ask what's different about these two.
Senator Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. President. On page 12, line 4 and 5, we have added the last sentence. In this section, church or religious denomination has a meaning given to religious organizations in AS 05-15-210. Which defines religious organizations. And I think this satisfies the, I believe it was information from the senator from Homer on the concern about what qualified as a religious organization, and it's already defined in that statute, so that's why we referred it to that.
Is there further debate on the second conference committee substitute, Senate Bill 248? If there is no further debate, members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so the second conference committee substitute, Senate Bill 248, has been adopted by a vote of 20 yeas to 0 nays. Senator Taylor.
Yes, I move that the vote on adoption of the conference committee report be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call on passage of the conference committee substitute will be considered the roll call on the effective date clause. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on CSHB 443 resources.
Senator Ellis's notice of reconsideration is noted on CSHB 443. Are we finally to unfinished business, or what do we have? No, Madam Secretary.
Citations honoring Roger Huntington, honoring University of Alaska Anchorage, honoring Elizabeth Berry, honoring Carlin Hitchcock, honoring 1994 Indiana Ice Clinic winners, honoring Lewis Kellogg, honoring Rick Luthi, honoring Harold DeArmond, honoring Dennis Duff Wilkins and William Drake, honoring Arco, Alaska, honoring Sharon McMullen, honoring Citizens Review Panels, in memoriam, Robert J. Wentmeyer.
Senator Taylor?
I'd like to be shown there as a co-sponsor on ARCO.
What? I do believe that this particular citation with that particular prime sponsor certifies for the Mike Szymanski pander to the public award.
Senator Taylor?
I just couldn't pass. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations appearing on today's calendar are approved.
Okay. CS for House Bill 531, State Affairs amended, an act related to the Milk Control Advisory Board, and this bill was moved to the bottom of the calendar. The reconsideration was taken up. I don't know if I can. CS for House Bill 531, State Affairs amended, an act relating to the Milk Control Advisory Board, Museum and Collection Advisory Committee, and various other boards.
Bill 531, State Affairs amended, on reconsideration. At ease. Would the Senate please come back to order? The question before the Senate is final passage on reconsideration. Committee substitute House Bill 531, State Affairs amended. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Will the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute House Bill 531, State Affairs amended, has passed the Senate by a vote of 15 yeas, 5 nays. Senator Taylor, the effective date.
Move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on passage of the bill on reconsideration be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call on final passage on reconsideration will be considered the roll call on the effective date clause. Madam Secretary, do we have anything else we have to do?
I bring up my reconsideration of committee substitute House Bill 153, Judiciary, an act related to the awarding of good time deductions. Point McKenzie.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, this is a bill that I was feeling a bit uncomfortable with yesterday when we looked at the fiscal note that was a zero, and rather than rehashing all of what we went through yesterday on the areas of concern, that I think the assumptions that were raised by the Department of Corrections, that couldn't possibly be a zero fiscal note. And in looking back at this bill on how it went through the House and the Senate, I believe that it went to the House Judiciary Committee and to the Senate State Affairs, and those were the only two committees that this bill saw on both the House and Senate side. And there is a zero fiscal note, or excuse me, there is no fiscal note from Department of Law. And within the context of what was written here, there was a probability or a higher probability of litigation. And it would seem that if that were red flagged, that Department of Law also should have had some type of fiscal note. And so we don't even have that. And I'm concerned, Mr. President, that the information that I could gather was that these are prisoners who have 5 years left on their sentence. And at Point McKenzie, there is no treatment program there, zero. And I think that's really important for us to look at. There's no treatment program, no counselors at all on Point McKenzie, and yet in this list, I think that we had 18 sexual offenders that will have no treatment for 5 years, and then we're going to let them out on good time. And then the court, if they order treatment for these sexual offenders and they go to Point McKenzie, they can't get the treatment there. So what are we going to do? Let them out even though the court has ordered that this treatment be done? There is also, for the security, absolutely no fencing around the facility, minimal security there, and I think that should be a concern of those that's going to be sent out there. I think that we're looking for trouble when the only facility that we have for, quote, good time is at Point McKenzie, and yet women prisoners cannot go to Point McKenzie. I would think that would certainly raise a red flag for a discrimination case. If a woman wants to have some good time deducted from her sentence, there is no other facility in this state because of the title of that bill that says it's specifically Point McKenzie. There is no other facility where a woman, a prisoner, can have good time. And as was noted in one of the assumptions, was that, of course, there will have to be women that's going to be placed in Point McKenzie. for that very reason, and then we are talking about additional expenses. I was looking at putting an amendment on this, but and my amendment was going to have halfway houses and perhaps out of state as also being a volunteer basis for good time provisions, and it would require a title change and everything else within the bill. I just think that this bill has not been thought out well. It's going to cost the state a great deal of money that we don't have. Is there something that I don't know? Okay. Mr. President, I think that we need to just look at this very carefully, because there's just no way that this can be a zero fiscal note. And for us to pass a bill without having all the information is not what I think the general public has put us here for.
Senator Pierce.
Can we have a brief of these?
Hold it over.
Will the Senate please come back to order?
Mr. President, are we back in session?
Senator Taylor, we're back.
Okay. I would call up my reconsideration on House Bill number 47. Oh, we got 153 still up. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I thought we voted on that.
Senator Taylor, actually, you can do that.
But I still can do it, can I?
Yeah, you can do that too.
Okay, I've done it.
Are there any others you want to call up?
I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that the reconsideration on 47 be moved to tomorrow's calendar.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you.
Senator Taylor?
Mr. President, I would like to bring up reconsideration of House Bill 367.
That can happen,
too. If you
want
to move that, too, I don't care.
367?
The sign bill.
Okay, you want to hold that one, too?
I'd ask that it be held for tomorrow's calendar.
Without objection, committee substitute House Bill 367 will be held for tomorrow's calendar. Senator Adams.
Yes, I move that my reconsideration on House Bill number 183, Transportation, be held over till tomorrow.
Okay, Senator Adams, you taking up the reconsideration and holding it over?
Yes.
The reconsideration of House Bill 183 is taken up. And Senator Adams, would you make a separate motion? Because otherwise, you just hold it available for reconsideration.
Thank you. I move that my reconsideration be taken up tomorrow on House Bill number 183.
Without objection, the consideration of House Bill 183 under reconsideration will be taken up tomorrow. Senator Rieger?
I bring up reconsideration of Senate Joint Resolution 52.
Reconsideration of Senate Joint Resolution 52 is before us. Senator Rieger?
I ask that this bill be held in third reading until tomorrow's calendar on reconsideration.
Without objection, the reconsideration of Senate Joint Resolution 52 will be held for tomorrow's calendar. That brings us back to Committee Substitute Senate Joint Resolution. Wait a minute. House Bill 153 is still before us. Senator Lehman?
Mr. President, in response to some of the questions and that the thorough questioning that Senator from Nulato raised. Nulato. Sorry. Is that regarding women in the project, HOPE project is planning to phase in women in the future in separate facilities, and you know their response, and we had some questioning on this in the corrections subcommittee, is that they have to start somewhere, and they do have a, I believe it's a ranch house where they're planning to be able to start with five women and get that program started. The project manager also is planning to start a sex offender program, but my understanding is that treatment, while not available at Project Hope, if necessary, would be provided before the inmates would go to Project Hope at some other facility. And I further just note to members that this good time or special good time is not new. This is something that had been provided before in Alaska statutes. It's comparable to a very similar provision before that I understand was deleted from statutes when we took on presumptive sentencing. And I think that answers most of them. Security, I just again reiterate, these inmates are on the more at the end of their sentencing, and the department can decide who gets to go to the program. They're trying to be very selective at who is going to enter into the Project Hope program.
Senator Lincoln?
Mr. President, previous speaker, I was also at that meeting, and while some of the statements he says are true, it all requires dollars. That all of these things possibly are going to be done if money followed it. This is a zero fiscal note.
Senator Taylor, would you call the Senate?
I'm calling the Senate, so I stood up.
Senate is under a call. Please come back to order. The call has been satisfied. The Senate will stand. Senator Taylor?
Yes. It's a zero fiscal note because savings are occurring that offset the additional costs.
Question before the Senate is final passage, committee substitute, House Bill 153, judiciary amended. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Curtula from Nady A. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute House Bill 153, judiciary amended, has passed the Senate on reconsideration by a vote of 11 yeas, 9 nays. Senator Taylor.
I move the effective date clause.
The effective date clause on committee substitute House Bill 153, judiciary.
Mr. President.
Senator Duncan.
There's two effective date clauses. As I read the effective date clauses, if we don't adopt Section 5 effective date clause, that means that they can't begin doing regulations until 90 days after the act is signed. And if we don't adopt Section 6, it may take effect sooner than July 1st. So we could have it that it would take effect sooner than they have regulations.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of the...
Ask for a division of the question on the two effective dates. It is divisible.
The question is divisible. Senator, in order to ask for the division of the question, you have to propose the division, and I have to rule whether it's divisible in that way, and then
well,
we take the question as Part A and Part B.
I'd move we divide the question, Part A being the effective date of Section 5 and Part B being the effective date of Section 6.
Okay, the question is divisible. The first question, Senator Duncan.
Thank you. May we have an adjournment, please?
Would the Senate please come back to order, Senator Duncan?
Mr. President, I withdraw my motion for division of the question on the effective dates.
Without objection, your motion for the division of the question is withdrawn. The question is reunited. Senator Pierce.
It's no privilege.
Senator Pierce, under a point of personal privilege.
For all
privilege.
Those people waiting patiently, we're not going to have Senate Finance tonight. They're all over the building, I'm told.
Okay. The question before the Senate is the effective date on committee substitute House Bill 153, Judiciary Amended. Members may proceed to vote on the effective dates. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary lock the vote and record the vote? And so the effective dates on committee substitute House Bill 153, Judiciary Amended, will be 90 days after signing by the governor by 12 yeas to 8 nays. Does that bring us to unfinished business? We're under unfinished business. Senator Taylor.
Well, with no small degree of trepidation, I move and ask unanimous consent that the referral on House Bill 54, an act relating to telephone caller identification, be waived from the Judiciary Committee. The measure has had a hearing in the Labor and Commerce Committee. Next committee referral is ruled.
I object. Without objection, the Senator Donnelly.
You know, we haven't had a hearing on that in Judiciary, have we? Could you just kind of tell me a little bit about what the bill does?
To the best of my information, this is a bill that provides that a caller, a person who subscribes to a telephone service may ask that service to block the caller ID provision that would allow, as an example, if I have an unlisted phone number and I call you up and you have a telephone like we have in our office, some of us have in our offices now, that tells you who is calling you by their number. There's a provision whereby I could request the person with the unlisted number, so to speak, that my telephone call sign not show up on your phone. And this is so as to provide privacy. Many of the, there's a lot of different organizations that support this.
Is there objection to waiving the judiciary referral on House Bill 54? Without objection, the judiciary referral on House Bill 54 will be waived. Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent to withdraw Senate Bill 87, an act extending the APUC to June 30, 1994, which was introduced by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We put a lot of work into the APUC bill. Several committees over here did. And I want the House to have to deal with it. If they want to take telephone wars out, that's fine with me. They can do anything they want to it. But we put too much work into that bill simply to have that as a one-year extension vehicle.
The motion is to withdraw a bill that is. Where's the bill?
Over in the House. It's in Senate rules. We introduced, Mr. President, we introduced the bill last year as a quick one-year fix to the deal. We didn't have to use it because we eventually used a House vehicle. But the APUC bill that the Senate put so much work into is on the other side right now. My understanding is there's an effort to remove the phone wars from the bill and send it back to us.
Senate, please stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? The bill's history says the bill in question has been waived through the Judiciary Committee. It was heard with 4 due passes and 1 no rec in the Finance Committee. I don't believe it's in order to withdraw a committee bill. A member can withdraw their name as a sponsor of a bill, but once a bill's been through a committee, I believe it's the property of the body. I think you can by unanimous consent.
That bill, that all that action on that bill was last year. That was a backup bill last year that we ended up not having to need. I introduced the bill. My committee introduced the bill. I don't see why they can't withdraw it. I didn't ask them to introduce it. Why should I have to ask them to withdraw it?
Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I'm not sure whether you can or whether you can't, but on the 118th day,
I don't know if it matters.
At 10:30 in the evening, who cares?